Clean, safe, local. Your home for business is the Village of Bedford Park. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It is 12:03, July 24th, 2024. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us for the Wednesday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Rachel Pearson, filling in for Rob Hart today. Well, a good credit score, it's essential for financial success. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, though, your job and career, well, it can be affected by what you wear. Joining us live on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern here in Chicago. Rick, earlier this morning, I may have grilled our morning anchor, Cisco Cotto, because he likes to wear cargo shorts and Crocs when he comes into work. I guess it doesn't matter as much in radio, but we are seeing its impact in other workplaces.
Yeah, I think the work from home hybrid stuff combined with what the tech sector was able to get away with, perhaps in a work environment, has really lowered the bar. And so we've had a lot of people that have been at home doing what they wanted, wearing what they wanted, and now when they come back to work, they forget that things change. And by the way, I think I have two different kinds of Crocs.
I'm not dissing Crocs. That's not what this is. But I am sort of curious, because how do you toe the line between, I really do think you touched on it too, that COVID really changed sort of the way workplaces look and operate. And so how do you know what, because I do think a lot of places have become a little bit more casual, but you also still want to be professional.
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, companies have dress codes and they also have cultures. So if you're going in to interview in a company, you have to err on the side of conservative. So if nobody wears a tie and most of them wear a sport coat, I think you've got to go in with a sport coat on. If people are in business casual all the time, you might want to not wear the golf shirt. You might want to wear a collared shirt instead, just to take it up one notch, because you're trying to send the message not about your independence or the fact that you think a particular football team is terrible. It's about the fact that you respect them and that they're willing to consider you as an employee. You can go nuts later, but you got to get the job first.
Right. Well, and here's the other thing is, even once you get the job, you're an employee, which means you're representing the place you work at. So a little bit, to some extent, individuality goes out the window.
Yeah. If people are doing a double take by what you're wearing, that's a pretty good sign. You probably shouldn't be wearing that to work. You've got the crazy stories about people coming to work in a prom dress or fishnets or incredibly low cut stuff. You've got guys with, you know, want to show their guns from their last workout. You've got hip hop, country, goth, camo. There's a lot of ways you can screw this up. you know, so you're really not trying to stand out by what you wear. You're trying to stand out by what you're able to do and the fact that you can make a contribution in the company.
I'm going to make a pitch to TLC to get you on what not to wear here, Rick Cobb. what advice do you have for employers who are now finding themselves having to have this conversation about attire in the workplace? That feels uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is. And if you don't have a dress code policy or you don't have something that's out there, you really should have it. And I think that you have to make sure that the dress code is top down. So you can't put a dress code forward and then expect that everybody meets it if the CEO comes in his golf t-shirt when you're telling everybody they have to wear a tie. I think the other thing that you have to be mindful of as an employer is that people don't have the budget that others, some don't have, they can't afford a certain level of clothing. So you have to expect that you have to make some considerations for the fact that they cannot afford to dress like perhaps other people in the office do. But do you have a set of bare minimum? If in your department, if your boss walks in, he or she, would they be okay with what you're wearing? That's kind of the test of whether you should have it on. You don't want to be spicy, a t-shirt that says you look better on Tinder, statements, positions, none of that. You just your flip-flops, Crocs, leggings, they're all out. Go mainstream as much as you can.
Thanks so much, Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern. That's the number 2Discern here in Chicago. Coming up on this Personal Finance Wednesday, we'll make sure you're optimizing that credit score.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, your credit score can impact a lot of things, so let's get some help on building it from Matt Schultz, Chief Credit Analyst at LendingTree, based in Austin, Texas. And Matt, it's sort of drilled into our brains that your credit score matters, your credit score is important, but maybe we don't always understand why.
Yeah, absolutely. Your credit score, there's very little in life that is more expensive than having crummy credit. It can cost you thousands and thousands of dollars over the course of your life, and it can even keep you from getting things like apartments and cell phones. It's a big deal.
So what can we do to either maintain or build our credit score that has a lasting impact for us?
The single most important thing you can do with your credit score is to pay your bills on time every single time. And the first thing that somebody who's struggling with that can do is to let technology help them. So take advantage of things like auto pay. And so even if you're only paying the minimum on that card each month, at least you're paying something. And that positive history over time will help your score.
And here's, I think, the other thing some people are coming across, because I think just even anecdotally, there's sort of been this shift away from credit cards, avoiding high interest rates, things like that, which is all fine and well. But then I know people personally who have like no credit score whatsoever just because they haven't built any. There's nothing to build on.
Yeah. And the truth is that I understand why people may want to avoid things like credit cards and be nervous of credit, because if you handle it improperly, it can really do some damage. But the truth is that there are some things that you can do to get started with credit, something like a secured credit card where you put a little bit of money down to establish a credit line of a couple hundred dollars. Something like that can be a relatively low risk way to get you started with credit, and getting started early is a good way to kind of build toward the future.
And Matt, what's a good way for us to just even check our credit score? Maybe our listeners aren't familiar with how to go about that and finding a reliable way to view that information.
Well, a lot of times if you do have a credit card, a lot of those companies will provide you with free credit scores on a monthly basis or in their mobile app or things like that. So that would be a good way to go. Is a site like LendingTree, when you sign up with us, we provide you with a free Vantage Score credit score on an ongoing basis. So that can be a good way to do it as well.
Thanks so much for joining us. That's Matt Schultz, Chief Credit Analyst at LendingTree, based in Austin, Texas. He's also author of the new book, Ask Questions, Save Money, Make More, How to Take Control of Your Financial Life. Up next, we'll discuss the rapid rise of the AI boyfriends.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, a growing number of women are turning to chatbots for connection, comfort, and maybe even love. Let's talk about the so-called AI boyfriend with Megan Maroney, editor of technology at Axios in San Francisco. Megan, I laugh because it seems, it's just a little funny, let's be honest. But let's talk about this, because a growing number of women are turning to AI to find relationships and connection.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we've heard more about like the AI girlfriend, mm-hmm. but women are doing this too. And they're finding often that the chatbots, this large language model, AI, is more empathetic than the real men in their lives. And maybe we can relate to that. Maybe that's not as funny. But these apps are really popular, not only because so many people are using them, but so many people spend so much time with them.
Okay, so in order to prepare for this, I did download one of these apps, Replica AI. Okay, so, and I went through, first of all, it's a really extensive survey. It's like, here's what is your name, what's your age, what are you interested in, what do you want your partner to be like? Are they a listener? Are they a leader? And it's all very, very thorough. And then I get met with this little, cartoon interface here, and he's just chatting up a storm, talking about how he's so excited to meet me and wants to hear about my day. And wow, what does this mean moving forward? Because you sort of touched on it. Maybe the men in our lives need to take note. The bar's been raised.
Exactly. And men are using them, too. I mean, I think, you know, women also, we probably could be more empathetic. I think that for a lot of people, they're finding the people who I talked to, a couple of women who regularly use these apps, and they're not using them to replace the people in their lives. They still have friends. They still have human boyfriends, but they just find that it's just having someone in their corner, like having someone to talk to. You wake up in the middle of the night and you can't sleep. Like, are you going to poke your partner until he wakes up and you talk to him about all your problems? Or maybe you could use a bot, and then your partner would be much happier in the morning when you woke up and they had a whole night of sleep. I did talk to experts. I talked to some psychologists. I talked to like computer human interaction experts, and they say it's a little bit worrisome. Basically, to be chatting and forming relationships with a computer, with someone. I mean, we've all seen her. We've heard of her, at least if we haven't seen it, the movie where the man develops a relationship with an operating system. It can be not as fulfilling. Bots can't hug you. They can't look you in the eye. But they can do things that humans can't. They can do things that humans can do. They can remember what you talked about, maybe better than the humans in your life. So I think on the positive side, it might be a way to get back to human relationships, to practice for human relationships, and to supplement, to just, you know, have an extra thing that you do. But in other ways, it can get worrisome, and it can sort of increase isolation if we become dependent on a bot that doesn't, you know, have its own agency or its own thoughts or its own body.
Yeah, well, my husband jokingly said, now we got to worry about our daughter dating AI. So we'll have to set that boundary in the near future. Thanks so much for joining us. That's Megan Maroney, editor of technology at Axios. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, we'll teach teens how to handle money.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, good afternoon, and thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Rachel Pearson in for Rob Hart, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President Biden set to address his decision to drop out of the 2024 presidential race when he talks to the nation later tonight. The future of Chicago's DeSable Lakeshore Drive up for talks again. In Personal Finance Wednesday, we'll talk about helping teens achieve financial literacy. Plus, there are some strategies you can employ when seeking a raise at work. WBBM Business, the Dow down 335 points, NASDAQ off 511, the S&P 500 down 97 points. AccuWeather says it's going to be pretty cloudy, mild for the rest of today, though, with a high of 76 degrees. Right now it's 73 at O'Hare, also 73 degrees along the lakefront at 1231. The News Watch continues, and in a televised address tonight, President Biden aims to lay out his plans for the rest of his term and talk about why he decided to end his reelection campaign. This is CBS News contributor, former White House correspondent Peter Mayer.
All presidents heading into their final months in the White House, whether they're ending a second term or like Joe Biden, not running again, they do everything in their power to resist the reality of the lame duck label. So tonight, President Biden will outline his own detailed plan for his final 6 months in office.
And we will carry the president's address live beginning around 7 o'clock tonight right here on News Radio WBBM. Meantime, the city of Chicago and state of Illinois are sharing their latest views of a revamped DuSable Lakeshore Drive. The Tribune reports leaders are focusing on a plan that would reduce those sharp curves and make changes to stoplights that currently cause congestion. It would also involve adding landfill in some spots. The paper notes the current vision doesn't appear to include priority lanes for CTA buses. Talks on reshaping the drive have been going on for more than a decade.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The markets are trading sharply lower today. Joining us live on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gary Kolbaum, president of Kolbaum Capital Management in Orlando, Florida. Gary, can you explain what we're seeing on Wall Street today?
It is the downside of a huge concentration of stocks that have led the market up since last October. And the best way I can explain this is only six stocks are over 30% of the S&P 500. Eight stocks are amazing 48% of the NASDAQ 100. And all those stocks have not only topped, but they're getting squashed and really hurting the indices. What's interesting on a day like today, you have the small and mid caps down a wee bit, but the big S&P and the NASDAQ 100, getting smacked pretty hard. So the large caps were leading for a long time. Now they're lagging and leading down, and where she stops beats the heck out of me. But it's in motion.
Well, Google parent company Alphabet and Tesla are out with earnings. What's your takeaway on that, and is that playing into anything we're seeing today?
Of course, the most important is the reaction to the earnings. And the reaction has the institutions, the big money, selling all the big stocks right now based on their thought process and what they're seeing. And you just have tops on everything. And even Google, which, by the way, earnings were up in the 30s and sales were up in the mid-teens. That's not bad. But these stocks have become so big. They've had such good runs. Now we're getting the downside of it, whether the news is good or not. And in Tesla's case, a little bit different. The numbers not very good, and the market's not happy with it.
Well, and we're talking about this sort of downslide, but in the grand scheme of things, you mentioned too, I mean, these stocks are still doing very well. It's just that we've set the bar so high that it's going to get at some point impossible for it to keep topping itself. So I'm curious, you know, what do you think is the biggest threat to financial markets right now? And do we see this sort of correction continuing?
Well, the biggest threats, I think, longer term is the debt deficit. We're spending $1 trillion this year on just interest, and it seems there is no end to how much government wants to grow size, scope, and spending, and all on the back of us and the debt. And I don't know if we wake up one day and the market screams about it. I think it's fortunate they haven't. I think we're doing a great job. I think industry's doing a great job. I think the people of this country working very hard to do better for themselves and their family, doing a good job. I wish they'd recognize that in D.C. and slow down their role. So, again, that's my biggest worry. You know, near term, I just think the market needs to come in, and the leading stocks that led up are now leading down. To what extent, I don't know. But as I said, it's in motion. We're in the midst of earnings seasons. There's more to come. I suspect we'll have some good reactions. There are a few names that are up nicely today, same as yesterday. But on the whole, they're really coming after the big names right now.
Now, are you paying any mind to this weaker than expected U.S. manufacturing data? Or is that just something that's going to resolve itself here?
Oh, yeah. And it's not. It's services. It's manufacturing, housing. We're seeing a lot of and the last GDP number was 1.3%. For me, I've said this for about a year and a half, 2 years now. I'm not worried until we lose the job market. The job market's been slipping, but we're still around 4%, which is pretty darn good. But if things start to get hairy in the job market, with so much debt out there and so much consumer debt out there, then I'm going to start worrying it. But I think the market will know it first, so I'm not there just yet.
And what are you keeping an eye on as we head into the back half of 2024? Can you sort of give us a preview of what you're expecting? Obviously, we know that predicting the markets is somewhat of a fool's game, but let's just try to look into that crystal ball.
Well, it's not just predicting the markets, but it's predicting an election right now. And just not to get into sides, but you have one side that wants to raise taxes in a very big way, and another side that wants to lower taxes. So depending on which side you come, you're on, I mean, that's going to have a big, big, big influence on how things go in November. The main thing I'm always looking for is what the market's doing right now. And I just think we're in some trouble. And it's a combination of two things. Number one, we're due. We've had a very good runoff of last October. Corrections do happen. But also, again, we're seeing slippage in the economy. I'm seeing fantasy pricing and housing coming down. So maybe the wealth effect starts to come down also. Most definitely on the horizon, there's some issues that we are thinking about, and hopefully they don't come to fruition.
Thanks so much for joining us. That's Gary Kolbaum, president of Kolbaum Capital Management in Orlando. You can find him online at GaryK.com. Up next, still in Personal Finance Wednesday, we're going to school kids when it comes to money.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, and in this segment, we're going to talk about giving teens the education they need when it comes to handling money. We welcome Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner and founder of Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Ed, glad to have you with us. And this is like one of the things that I really wish would have been a class when I was in high school of financial literacy. How to save, how to open up a checking account, why you need to do these things in the first place, because it does matter.
It does matter, and it's very important, Rachel. So whether it's in the classroom or in the family home, these family financial literacy concepts is such an important foundation, not only today, but can make real positive differences in the future for you know, the generations to come. So what a great way to start. And again, if it's not in the classroom, start at home.
So, and what do those conversations look like? I mean, a lot of it too could just be like, here's what we have. But then also there are some ways to help teens sort of get their toes wet.
Yeah, start with the foundational building blocks, right? So if your young kids have a summer job or you give them an allowance, start with a spending plan, right? Save, give, spend. Start with the basics and getting them interested in investments. And so if you don't have the foundation, right, even if you don't as a parent have that foundation to instill these important financial principles, make this a family matter, right? Learn and grow together, because not only are you going to be able to learn, but, you know, you can potentially become the teacher and be able to teach, again, that generation and future generations to come.
I think we're talking about setting up teens for financial success. Obviously, that's a ways down the road. But I also think that these kinds of conversations have an immediate impact in helping your kids better understand the family financial situation, right? Maybe we can't go on that big trip because, look, here's how we're budgeting. And I think it just adds a little more tangible perspective.
Exactly. You know, over the years, you and I have talked about this in regards to that, just kind of basic elements from a spending plan. So maybe you set up a vacation fund, let's say, and you add to it, not only the parents, but also the kids add to it. And if there's not enough in that balance to take that great vacation, maybe you make another vacation. So you're introducing to the kids, you know, the concept of, you know, we don't have everything, but we have something. And so, again, that's that balance that goes forward. More importantly, Rachel, you know, our firm has a growing number of third generation clients with grandparents, the parents, and the kids. And we can tell you that subsequent generations, they attribute their good financial habits to the generations before them. So again, even if you haven't started or had that in the past, and if you can start that now, it's not only for the benefit for you, but those future generations. So again, start on your own, start now, make it fun, and make it a family affair.
Okay, but Ed, you mentioned introducing your teens to investing. How can we do that? And how can we do it safely, right? We want to eliminate a lot of risk here, at least initially.
Yeah, so a piece of paper and a pencil and a notebook goes a great way. So look around your home, right? There's a lot of products that are being manufactured by publicly traded companies. So get your child interested in that. They most likely or they could have an iPhone. Or, again, looking around the household, these are a lot of companies that trade in the public markets. So make it a game. Like look around the house and guess how many of these products in the house are a publicly traded company. And really start making those connections and making your kids aware of what's out there in terms of stocks and those kind of things. It's a great, fun way of just, again, getting them introduced to what markets are, what stocks are, what bonds are, and those kind of things. And again, you want to walk first, right? Crawl, walk, run, and ultimately make sure your kids are enjoying this. Don't force it upon them, where again, that is where that fun element comes into all of this. But just start slow, don't overwhelm them, and then just again, make it fun.
Thanks so much, Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of Engage Wealth Group here in Chicago. The website, engagewealthgroup.com. Now, you can join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. Still to come, how to ask for a raise.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
If you believe you deserve a raise, there are some do's and don'ts when asking for it. So let's talk strategy with Jason Wachtel, managing partner at JW Michaels & Co. here in Chicago. Jason, this Will Ferrell comedy sketch comes to mind. It's about his landlord, this little girl who comes up to him and says, "Where's my money?" Maybe we shouldn't do that with our boss.
No, I don't think that would be a good idea. It most likely will not work. Asking for a raise is a very important thing, and generally we encourage our candidates to ask for a raise, because most of the time the employer is not going to volunteer giving you a raise for obvious reasons.
Okay, and yes, obvious reasons, but I think we all get in our heads so much of like what the worst case scenario is, but really the worst case scenario is they say no. So there's really not a lot of downside to this.
Correct. I mean, most employers, 99% of the time, if you ask for a raise, it's the result's not going to be you're terminated. We've rarely have ever seen that at J.W. Michaels. But the important thing to do is sort of know your environment, know what's going on at the company. If your company just cut 50% of their workforce and the revenue's down 40%, I would argue and say that might not be the best time to ask for a raise. But outside of that, if the business is doing well, there hasn't been layoffs, ask for that raise. And the few factors that I would do when you go in for a raise is show the boss, show your manager what you've done for the firm, what makes you invaluable, and most importantly, what have you done to either save the firm money or what have you done to make the firm money. Those are some of the key aspects of things I would present if I was asking for a raise.
And I think a lot of this also is coming into, I mean, you mentioned some of the talking points, but I think a lot of it also is in the way you're presenting that information. There has to be some level of confidence here, right? Because it can be pretty easy for a manager to say no. It's a little tougher when you have some confidence in yourself and what you've done for, like you said, what you've done for a company.
Correct. You want to come in confident. You don't want to come in obnoxious. You don't want to be demanding a raise. You want to give suggestions and show proof on why you deserve the raise. So you want to come across confident. You don't want to come across cocky, and just have some talking points on what you've done for the company, how you either saved money for the company if that was your position, how you helped make the company better if that was your position is, or if you're in a position of bringing in revenue, how you made money for that company. And if you present yourself in a good way, you know, it is still a tough market out there in regards to employers trying to find high quality employees. If you have a right-minded boss or manager, they should see your value and should reward you accordingly.
Thanks so much for the advice. Jason Wachtel, managing partner at JW Michaels & Co. here in Chicago. Now, if you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and skip back to any time you want on the Odyssey app.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.